and welcome to another episode of the NBCSports.com College Basketball Talk Podcast. My name is Rob Doster. It is Wednesday, February 6th. I have a fun show on the way for you today. With the NBA trade deadline looming down against us, I was able to connect with my buddy from The Athletic, Sam Vecini, to talk through every possible scenario if there was a college basketball trade deadline. We are trying to solve the biggest question marks for the best teams in the country. And we do have some fun ideas. We tell you how to fix Michigan. We tell you how to fix Michigan State. We tell you how to fix Kansas. We tell you how to fix all of the big boys that are going through some problems right now. Before I get into that conversation, I have to make the usual ask. Please rate, please review, please subscribe to this podcast in any app that you listen to podcasts in. When you have an interaction with this episode, with this series, if you rate it, if you review it, if you subscribe to it, if you download a podcast, it really does help. It helps us in the rankings. It helps us in the metrics. It helps make my bosses happy. When my bosses are happy, I'm happy. And when I'm happy, you are getting a better podcast. So anything you can do is just going to make your day that much better. I thank you for it. And now let's get into that conversation with Sam Vecini. And now I am thrilled to welcome back to the College Basketball Talk podcast. You know him from his mock drafts at The Athletic. You know him from the Game Theory podcast. You know him for being a legend out there in LA. His name is Sam Vecini. Samuel, what is going on, sir? How are you doing?
Rob, I'm doing this podcast instead of going to a gym class today, trying to get my fitness on. You know, you were hating on the gym classes the last time we talked, man. I am not appreciative of your attitude toward me. I'm trying to better myself, Rob.
I am all about you living your best life, but I've just never. Maybe it's just me because I can't do like the gym class thing. The only time I tried this was I tried to go to like a body pump class with my wife once, and like, look, I'm in fairly decent shape, right? Like I run a lot.
Yeah,
I used to play a lot more basketball than I do now. We like just set up the gym in the basement. So like, I'm always just doing pushups and like if it's midnight and I'm trying to grind through like two more games on DVR, I always make sure I'm knocking out some pushups and pull ups so I don't fall asleep on my recliner watching the game, which, you know, that's a very real danger for me. I'm getting kind of old. But so I'll go to this body pump class thinking that I'm like in good shape and you know, I don't know if you've ever been to body pump, but it's basically like an hour of nonstop. Just like you put light weights on your shoulders and do a whole bunch of squats and a whole bunch of step ups and all these different kinds of exercises. And like, I legitimately could not walk for 4 days. My wife, my wife was like, look, you cannot use, I had like 45 pounds on the bar. And she's like, look, you use that much weight, you're going to, you might hurt yourself. I don't know. You got to be careful. Don't use that much weight. Don't try to be a tough guy. You're going to make yourself look silly. And I was like, what are you talking? 45 pounds. I got this. I'm in shape. Yeah. Look at me. I'm all man. Couldn't walk for 4 days. It was awful. I will never do that again. The worst experience of my life.
So so my fiance goes to the same place that I do. And sometimes we'll do them together. And like, it's a yoga studio that also has like just crazy like HIIT classes, so like high intensity interval training. So I tend to do like maybe 2 HIIT classes a week and then, you know, maybe 3 HIIT classes a week and then 1 to 2 Pilates classes a week of some sort, because I'm starting to realize, you know, as I get older, flexibility matters.
Yeah, that's very SoCal of you.
It's no. It is by far the most Los Angeles thing that I do.
Yeah.
Like it is the most, like, I live here in this bubble of like liberal Southern California and like carefree Southern California. So I go to a yoga studio. That part of it does kind of annoy me, but I am bettering myself and I'm living my best life, Rob.
Yeah. Look, as long as you feel like you're getting more healthy, that's all that matters. I'm not cut out for the whole gym class thing. It's not for me. I need is a treadmill and a pull-up bar and like a couple of dumbbells and I'm good to go. I don't squat anymore. I don't bench anymore. My back and my knees are too messed up for that. But just give me like, make sure I got a treadmill I can run on. Give me something where I can do like pull-ups and push-ups and sit-ups and just give me like a nice little circuit. I don't know if you, like, for the people that are CrossFitters here, they'll know what the Murph workout is, and doing a Murph is one of my favorite things to do.
I have no idea what that is.
You run a mile, then you do 100 pull-ups, 200 push-ups, and 300 either air squats, and or I'll do like 150 air squats and 150 sets of abs, and then you run another mile.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a wild workout.
It's super intense, and you got to do it for time. And you know, my brother-in-law is super into CrossFit, and he could do it in like 30 minutes, and it takes me like an hour.
Jesus. That's ridiculous, being able to do that in 30 minutes.
Yeah, I don't understand how he could do some of the stuff that he does.
Not the most in shape Doster?
No, well, that's my brother-in-law. I'm definitely the most in shape Doster, but he's my wife's brother, and he's certainly way more in shape than I am. Like, I used to be like feel pretty good about myself when I would go, and like to, because her parents have a pool, I'd feel pretty good about myself going to the pool, and then he started showing up. I'm like, I'm gonna put my shirt back on, and I'm gonna go back inside, and I'm done swimming. Yes, you could throw my son 8 times higher in the air than I can. What of it? All right. So the reason I have you on here today, Sam, is because you and I are both love nerding out about the trade deadline and love coming up with these hypotheticals. And so what I like to do every year at the NBA trade deadline is to put together a college basketball trade deadline of the moves that I would make. The only caveat that I have with this kind of stuff is that if it sounds weird because this is totally a hypothetical situation, but if hypothetically this was allowed, it would have to be something where both teams would decide to make that trade. So we couldn't just say like, oh, you know what? Let's go put Ja Morant on Michigan State because that would be awesome. When Murray State would never, ever, ever make a trade for Ja Morant. So you got to find seniors on teams that don't really have anywhere where any chance to move forward. You have to find underclassmen that you could on mid-major teams that you could bump up to the high major level in exchange for a couple prospects type deal. You got to dig a little bit and put a little effort into it. And I think we came up with some pretty good ones. So I think the conversation that we need to start with is probably Kansas, right?
I think we got to fix Kansas and make them the Big 12 favorite again. Otherwise, their fans are I don't think they're on the verge of like a meltdown, but there's some real worry there.
Yeah, I think this is the most scared that they probably ever should be, you know, since the streak started back in 2004. And by the way, I looked it up just like because I wanted to kind of to date it to see what the best songs were and the biggest hits were in 2004, the last time that Kansas didn't actually win the Big 12 title. And like Hoobastank was the thing back then. Remember them?
I do remember Hoobastank. I do not still listen to Hoobastank, but I do remember I went through a phase in high school of Hoobastank.
And do you remember that guy, Eamon, that had the one song where he was like, I don't want you back?
Yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah.
I think that, because the song was titled like F U.
Yep.
I think that my parents kept deleting that song off of my computer because of the bad language.
Yeah, I would play a little bit of that song here on the podcast right now, except that we would probably get that little E in iTunes, and you don't want that. That's a bad thing to have pop up. So, anyways, Kansas. I think we kind of came up with two trades for this, and I'm going to start with the first one because I think it makes a little bit of more sense for why you can make the second trade. And what I would do is I would trade Vic Law, Northwestern's Vic Law, for backup point guard Charlie Moore. Charlie Moore is a sophomore. He has 2 more years of eligibility. And I think at Northwestern is a little bit more his level. I don't know if he's a guy that's ever going to be a starter at Kansas, even when Devin Dotson leaves. I don't see him being good enough to start at that level and be able to play, and for Kansas to be able to play the way they need to play. And Vic Law, to me, is the perfect fit. Even if Kansas ends up being forced to play small again after this hypothetical trade deadline, I think he's just such a perfect fit because, you know, he's 6'7" with long arms. He's a really, really good defender. And I know he's not shooting it well this year, but he's a career, like, 37, 38% three-point shooter. I think he's 39% the last 2 seasons while taking more than 4 threes per game in each of those years. So, to me, Vic Law is kind of the perfect fit for what Kansas is going to want to do. Do you like that move?
I do. I like that a lot. He's just a more solid LeGerald Vic, like a more trustworthy guy. Like LeGerald Vic last night, I'm sure you saw, but, you know, Kansas fans probably saw as well. Bill Self just like pulled him for the last 16 minutes of the first half because he broke down, I want to say, 2 straight times defensively. And Bill was just like, I can't deal with this right now. probably not quite as good a shooter as LeGerald has developed into, but would certainly give Kansas more optionality there. And to me, it kind of segues nicely into, and well, I should talk about Northwestern too. Charlie Moore is a Chicago kid. That is a fit that is just perfect, in my opinion. I kind of wonder if Charlie Moore should look into transferring to Northwestern after this year, to be honest. It would be a smart move for him, I think. Like you said, it's better for his level. Now, it kind of segues nicely into the move that I see, which is Chris Silva for Marcus Garrett. Chris Silva is just an awesome post player. He would fit perfectly within Kansas's low post offense, draws fouls at an exceedingly high rate, much in the same way that Yodoka Azubuike does. Probably not quite the interior defender that Azubuike is, but he would give Kansas's offense that jolt in the arm that it needs. Marcus Garrett going to South Carolina. Man, I can't imagine a more Frank Martin player than Marcus Garrett.
Perfect.
That dude
perfect.
Defends his ass off. That would be something that Frank Martin would absolutely love.
Yes, I agree with you 100%. And the whole Chris Silva going to Kansas thing, the most interesting part about that is it lets Dedrick Lawson kind of get away from the basket a little bit. And he can't do that right now. And as good as he's been in the post, and like as good as he is backing his guy down, where I think he really shines is when you can kind of put him in those high-low actions. And, you know, what they were doing with Doak was they would have big-to-big ball screens. And with his ability to pass, that is just so hard to guard. And the idea of putting, you know, yep, Ochai Agbaji and even Vic Law and Quentin Grimes and David Dotson around Dedrick Lawson while he's running a high ball screen with Chris Silva, it's just like, I'm thinking about that. I'm like, wow, that would be a lot of fun to watch. And I can just imagine Bill Self, like, imagine him having those tools at his disposal with the way that he's able to draw up plays and put players in situations where they can see. That's just, it's perfect. It's the perfect fit.
I was talking about this with a coach. Is Ogbai, like, already their third best player?
I would probably say no, just because there's times where he kind of disappears. Like there's times where he's very noticeable as a freshman. When he's at his best, he's very, very, very good. But he's still, you know, last night he disappeared for a little bit. There was a stretch before the Texas game when he blew up where he disappeared for like 2 weeks. But he has moments where you watch him play and you're like, he's going to be very, very, very good. And I hope, you know, if he stays around for 3 years, if he ends up being a junior at Kansas, he's the kind of guy that could be a first-team All-American that plays his way into being like a top 20-ish kind of pick. Is that too much?
Yeah, he's interesting. I mean, like, I don't know if he's there yet, but he's at least very interesting. So what we've done here is we have made Kansas, we've reformed their starting lineup into Devon Dotson, Quentin Grimes, LeGerald Vick. Well, maybe Vic or Law, or maybe you could start both Vic and Law and sit Quentin Grimes and bring him off the bench.
That's
and then
what
we had Dedrick
do.
Lawson and Chris Silva.
Yep, and you would have Agbaji and Grimes coming off the bench, and that would let you be able to go small, and you can use Mitch Lightfoot and David McCormick. And Lightfoot, like I shit him on all over this podcast, but he's actually not. He can be useful in moments in certain matchups. And I think that he would be a good third or fourth big man for Kansas. And I think he is a good third or fourth big man. The problem is right now he is basically their number two option because McCormick is just not ready. So I'd love that team. That team wins. That team wins the Big 12. I'll say it right now. The team we just built wins the Big 12.
If there are no other deals in the Big 12, I think that team wins the Big 12.
I did not come up with any other ones. It's hard to Oh, no, you know what? I did come up with one other one, and maybe we can get to that in a second. But it's hard for some of those other teams. Like Iowa State, I don't see where you can really make a trade with that Iowa State team. And I thought about it a lot, you know, both with – because they have a lot of guys that kind of play the same position, and there are teams that are looking for guys that do what Ohio State's guys do well. And I was trying to figure out, like, how I can maneuver that and if I can get rid of one of these guys. But – you know, honestly, there's nothing you can, I think you can do to improve what Iowa State is in terms of giving them a different kind of player. Now, if you just gave them somebody that was better at what these guys are doing, then that's a different story. But in terms of the way that that roster is built and the pieces that they have, I don't really know how much you can do to make it better. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, you just have to give them a better player, like you said.
Yes.
I don't know. It's hard. Like for me, like if I was them, I would want more of a traditional four to be able to just match up better with teams, right? So like I know when we talked, we were trying to find a spot for Robert Franks. Like Robert Franks would be an interesting fit there, even if you brought him off the bench behind these guys. That's kind of the type of player that would be interesting.
But the problem that I ran into was, who do you give up? Like, I like him as the eighth guy in the rotation. I don't love Robert Franks there if you have to give up, say, Talen Horton Tucker, because I think what Talen Horton Tucker provides would be more valuable than what Robert Franks would provide. Like, I get what you're saying. I love the idea of...
I mean, it's Washington State. Like, can you get him for, like, Zion Griffin?
Probably, I guess. Just anybody off the bench. You know, Ernie Kent is probably on his way out. You might as well just, you know, do what you can to try to build a little bit of hype in the program. But I don't, like I said, I would love him as the eighth piece in that rotation. I don't want to give up one of their core, like they basically they go 17,
right?
More or less. Right. And I don't want to give up one of those seven guys because what they do works so perfectly together that I don't want to mess with that. And look, I think I can say it right now. You know, I went all in on Iowa State once after they beat Kansas, and then they went and lost two in a row, and I think I got scared a little bit. But, Sam, I'm ready to go all in. I'm all in again. I'm going to have them in the Final Four. I'm going to have them and Marquette in the Final Four. No matter what my bracket – well, I don't want to say that in case Duke's there, but I'm probably going to have both of them in my Final Four.
That is aggressive.
It is. You got to live dangerously, man.
That is. Look, I think that it's them and Kansas State are my two favorites to win the Big 12 right now. You like told me I was crazy when I said Kansas State, by the way.
I did. And I still think that is crazy to think Kansas State can win. I would say Iowa State, then Kansas, and then Kansas State. Just because, like, I can't – you watch them run offense, and it is just mind-boggling. Like, you throw a 2-3 zone at them, and they just completely forget that they're basketball players. It's unbelievable. Like – Bruce Weber is a better coach than he gets credit for, but can you please at some point put together a zone offense that actually works? You might have the best weapon to use against a 2-3 zone in D-Wayne. Put him at the logo. Put him at the foul line. Give him the ball. Let him make a play. It's not that difficult. Find a way to do it. The idea that they spent basically the last 15 minutes of that first half passing the ball around the perimeter against the 2-3 zone and scoring like 1 point in the final 12 minutes. Just, I watched that this morning and it just gave me agita, man. Like I almost threw my coffee cup through my office door. It was very, very difficult to watch. And that's why I don't think that they can, I understand what you're saying and you might be right. Like I trust your basketball opinions on lots of stuff, but I just can't get there myself.
So here would be my pitch. They've been up over 1 point per possession in five of their last seven Big 12 games. They're only two below that.
Look, it's just
90.
I don't want to. I mean to cut you off. 95.6
against Iowa State. 94.6 against Texas Tech. They've been okay or offensively when you combine it with the top five defense, which is what they currently are in KenPom. They've been okay on offense numbers wise. I'll say that.
It's always funny to me to think like, look, the reason that you can't totally hate this team offensively is because five of their last seven games, they've been over 1 point per possession, which is like, that shouldn't be that high of a bar to clear.
I know, but it is. but here's the thing though. That's all they need when they have that defense.
True. No, you're right. You're right. Like, I'm not disagreeing with you and you might be right. I can't get there myself unless Bruce Weber finally finds a way to take advantage of the fact that he has Dean fucking Wade to use in the high post. I just want to see it, man. You have all these teams that never play zone. They play zone on you. I wonder why.
Are we dropping hard F-bombs on this podcast now? Because I can join you pretty quickly on this.
I'm going to have to bleep that one out. I always bleep the F-bombs out, but it's Dean Wade, man. Dean fucking Wade. All right.
Dean Wade is good.
He is good. He's hashtag. He's not just good. He is hashtag good.
He's a dude for that team.
Okay, so the last one of the Big 12 that we talked about, I mean, this is this is good. Like, we're super nerdy for this one. And there's maybe like 10 people that will actually get who this is. But Tulsa's Daquan Jeffries to Texas Tech for their freshman point guard, Kyler Edwards. And Edwards is good. Like, he's had some moments, but it's just like Jeffries is just such a perfect fit for what Chris Beard wants to do. He can bang some threes, so he can space the floor a little bit. He's like a kind of an undersized small ball four, which is just like, it feels like that's it. If you gave Chris Beard nothing but undersized small ball fours, he'd probably go undefeated. Give him like five guys that are 6'5", 230, that defends defender asses off, make threes, and can guard multiple positions, and he's going to go out and he's going to go undefeated. That's all he needs.
Yeah, and I mean, he's mobile enough defensively to where I think it's a really good fit. He is, like you said, a big-bodied guy, like strong, physical. Chris Beard would appreciate that. Your original deal had them getting Justin James, which I thought was interesting because he is a playmaker for a team that really needs one. But I don't think that his skinny frame would work well within their defense, where your entire goal is to force everything baseline and dissuade from middle penetration. I think guys just kind of go through him and would be able to get middle penetration a little bit easier.
Yeah. And the big thing for me was a point you made. And this was, I think we were texting or talking about that. I don't remember what it was, but yeah. James needs to have the ball in his hands, and he's very ball dominant and he's a very high usage player. And that is not going to work when he would be like their second or third best offensive weapon, depending on like which Matt Mooney shows up and whether or not Jarrett Culver has remembered how to make jump shots.
Yep. No, I agree. And like, the other thing is too, I don't think it can be like a crazy high level player either, because they're probably not giving up Kayvon Moore. They're really, really high on Kayvon Moore. So you're talking, your best asset is probably either Kyler Edwards or maybe Deshaun Corpru. So I think you're just in a place where you're not necessarily getting the most elite player back, because you'll lose the bidding war for some of these guys. I think that is super in the weeds, but kind of accurate also.
Yeah, and I don't, like, Texas Tech doesn't need a super elite player. They need someone that fits into the culture of that program and will, like, kind of accept their, like, Texas Tech is, they're no different than, like, a Virginia or Villanova. And when Chris Beard starts doing this over and over and over again for however long he stays at Texas Tech, then people are going to start recognizing it. Like, they, the same way that Virginia has a culture where they identify a certain type of kid that is going to fit perfectly in with what Tony Bennett wants to do, same way as Jay Wright identifies a certain kind of kid that's going to fit perfectly in with what he wants to do, Chris Beard knows how to identify the guys that he wants that fits into what he wants to do and finds a way to make it work with him on the floor, or with them on the floor. And it's just, he's so good, man. Like, how about this? So last year in Boston, I was there for their regional at the Sweet 16, and they travel like 50 deep to every game they go to. Like, anybody that is just marginally associated with that basketball team travels with them. The other part of it is they travel with this monster speaker everywhere they go, and they have like one GA that's basically assigned to be their DJ. And it's the weirdest thing, because they'll flip between, like, they'll be playing like Mo Bamba one song, and the next song will be Waylon Jennings. And I actually asked Chris Beard about it last year, and he basically said, like, the number of songs that the players get to listen to, like, during their pregame warm-ups or while they're stretching or whatever, depends on, like, how well they played or how well they practiced.
It's amazing.
Yeah, so it's like, it was, when they were at this this thing, the best part about it was, you only get a certain amount of time when you're on the practice floor at the NCAA tournament events, right, when you're on site. And Chris Beard didn't want to waste the time on the practice floor warming up or stretching or any of that. So he was doing it in the hallway after Villanova. Like, it was the day before they played Villanova. And after Villanova's practice, Chris Beard had his team, like, warming up and stretching and loosening up in the hallway with this big old, like, this monster speaker. One of the ones that they hang up, like, in the ceiling of a basketball arena, right? This monster speaker in the hallway just blasting this music while Villanova's whole team was, like, in their locker room. Right in the same hallway. It was quite fantastic. The experience. I just want to be on that Texas Tech basketball team. I think we'd love it.
The other thing that we should give Baylor someone too, because, like, they're very interesting to me. Maybe they're who we give Robert Franks to. We just got to get Robert Franks off of Washington State. I just want to see what he looks like in a competent situation.
Yeah, and Baylor would be a good fit for him. Baylor's so interesting to me, man. I don't even know if they necessarily.
I don't get it.
So my theory on it, and tell me what you think of this, is that so they didn't have Mekhi Mason for the first three games, right? Because he was coming back from his injury, and they didn't have Mario Kegler for the first six games because of whatever that was. And then Jared Butler, the kid that came from that was the Alabama commit, didn't really start figuring things out until about halfway through the season. So they had all these new pieces. They already had nine new pieces coming in, and like three of their best players weren't there for the start of everything that they were doing. So it took them a while to put it all together. But now, like, Mekhi Mason's out there putting up 40 on you, and Mario Kegler is starting to do some of the things that Tristan Clark was doing before he got hurt. And Jared Butler is playing like one of the better freshmen in the Big 12. And, like, you know, that zone that they play, it's just funky to play against. It's like the same thing with Syracuse. Yep. You know, you just, it almost doesn't really matter who the pieces are out there. That zone just throws you off.
Well, here's a, so it's hard to like, it's hard to pick out who you would give to someone else, right? Like, do you try and like, is it Matthew Mayer? Like, maybe that's their piece, right?
Yeah.
He's interesting, by the way. Like, he's a really like interesting prospect to me. He's 6'9", can play like the combo forward, shoots it a little bit.
Yeah, he's a good player.
Yeah. So like maybe the move here is, I know you gave Benny Boatwright to Syracuse, but I'm a little bit lower on that than you are. Maybe it's Benny Boatwright to Baylor. Give them a second offensive option next to Mekhi Mason. Boatwright is a disaster defensively in man, but playing that zone, he's a little bit better. Maybe that's the move.
Yeah. I mean, Boatwright and Franks are kind of like the same piece, right? They fit really well at Syracuse, and they fit really well at Baylor just because, like, they're long. We don't really know how good they are defensively. They don't really want to move, but they can really, really, really shoot it. And especially, like, at a place like Syracuse, you need somebody that can shoot it and can space the floor. Simply because you don't really have that. You know, you have Tyus Battle driving into a brick wall every single time he puts the ball on the floor. It'd be nice to be able to give him a little bit of space.
Can I give like a little bit of a Syracuse take? I don't know that it's that their guys can't shoot. Like, Tyus Battle, I think, can shoot. Elijah Hughes can definitely shoot. I think it's more that they just don't run anything to get guys open shots. Like, everything is Tyus Battle comes around a ball screen and has to chuck up a, you know, 25 footer, right? And like, you know, Jim Boeheim's awesome. He's developed his zone over many years, but I mean, you look at what they're running. They're not running really anything on offense.
Yeah, it's not the prettiest offense in the world, and I can't decide if that is because the guys that he has can't really do it, or because that's what he wants to do with Tyus Battle, or what he thinks is the best option for him. I don't really know. I do wonder, like you mentioned, how to run something and get somebody open. How is Pascal Chukwu going to set a screen on anybody? That's like having a paperclip set a screen on you.
Yeah, no question. That matters. But Chukwu's also just an awesome defender for them, too. So, like, let's talk about Syracuse if we're going to jump in. So you gave Benny Boatwright for Jalen Carey, right? Yep.
I think Jalen Carey is the piece that you can use because he's a little bit smaller. I think that big guards work so much better in that zone. And he's also a freshman that is, I mean, he's put up some pretty good numbers and had some pretty good games already this season. I think that he has a pretty bright future. I just don't know if Syracuse is the best place for him. I'm pretty sure, like, isn't he from Rochester? I might be making that up, but I'm pretty sure he's like a New York kid. Upstate
I thought he was a New Jersey kid, but maybe, New Jersey? I mean, you might be right. I don't know. But here's the other thing, too. They have Joe Girard coming in next year, which is like a good fit for them point guard wise. So Jalen Carey, I do think, is somewhat expendable in these scenarios.
I cannot wait for the Joe Girard, Buddy Boeheim backcourts. That's going to be fun.
Yeah, next year, they're going to be interesting because they have Guerrier. They have Elijah Hughes. They have Joe Girard, probably Jalen Carey as well. You know, they're going to be interesting, and maybe O'Shea Brissett returns because I don't really think he's good enough to go pro yet. So they're going to be very, very interesting to me next year.
Don't sleep on Buddy Buckets.
Buddy Buckets is fun. He's a good player. He's going to shoot. I know that. But here's why I'm a little bit less in on Benny for them. He would help them a lot, but I don't know that he is better than any of Elijah Hughes, Tyus Battle, or O'Shea Brissett.
Well, I don't know that he is either. And generally speaking, I would say it's nice just to have that other option. But like Jim Boeheim doesn't use options. He just plays the best players for 40 minutes, and he always has. It's just what he does. So you might be right on that one, Sam.
So like if I was them, I'd be trying to get a, like some sort of lead guard in the mold of a like a John Gillen like they had a couple years ago. I would go get John Davis from Charlotte.
Yeah, you love him.
He's really good. They are a bad basketball team. They are just an awful, atrocious basketball team in terms of talent. But I think Ron Sanchez has the right idea. He's a Virginia guy, and I think that you can probably make the case that someone like a Merrick Dolezal makes a lot of sense for that scheme because he's a mobile, really, really good defender who is at least smart positionally. He's so skinny right now that he gets blown through in the ACC. But if I think if you put him on that level, he'd be really, really good.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about the Michigan schools. I know that you had a recommendation for who Michigan State, who, by the way, they've lost three in a row now. Just a piece that can maybe help. Like, what are they even missing? Because so real quick, my Michigan State take. The loss against Illinois was Cassius Winston just having an awful night, Kyle Ayers making some really bad plays down the stretch, and Michigan State just having an awful, awful, awful day against an Illinois defense that's designed to pressure you, speed you up, and turn you over, right? So they did all that. I think they committed, like, what was it, 25 turnovers. Cassius Winston had 9 turnovers, played awful, and Michigan State still took the lead. You know, if Kyle Ayers does not make two bad plays down the stretch and Ayo Dosunmu, is that how you, I never get his name right, Dosunmu.
Ayo Dosunmu, yeah.
If Ayo Dosunmu doesn't make those two big threes down the stretch and Kyle Ayers doesn't make two awful plays, they end up winning that game. But to me, the biggest issue was they just could not handle the pressure, and Cassius Winston had a bad game. Against Indiana, they kind of got beat up a little bit physically by an Indiana team that decided to show up. They got burned by Indiana making 6 straight threes in the second half when they were shooting 25% from three in Big Ten play coming in, and they shot 8 for 22 from the line, and Nick Ward was 1 for 9 from the free throw line. And against Purdue, that to me looked like a team that was a little bit tired more than anything else. You have these three losses in a row, none of which were great performances, and all of which were caused by, like, different things. So it's not like you – with Kansas, we can sit here and say, okay, this is why Kansas is struggling. Even with Michigan, we can sit there and look at them and be like, okay, they have issues on the offensive end of the floor. They play three guys that aren't really offensive weapons, blah, blah, blah. With Michigan State, there is nothing that I can look to and point to and say, okay, that is the problem. Because all these three losses, the cause of it was something very, very different.
So – I do think I can point to a problem. I think that they just don't have enough right now on the wing, just straight up. Like they need wing players in the worst way. And I would say basically everybody 2 through 4 right now is probably not quite at the level that they need to win a Big Ten title. Like that's a high standard. Like I'm not saying that Matt McQuaid is not a Big Ten level player. I think he's good. I think Aaron Henry is going to be awesome. I think he is a legit like 2020 draft, 2021 potential draft pick. But these guys just aren't quite high level enough, in my opinion. And in Aaron Henry's case, it's yet. He's not high level enough yet. Kyle Ahrens is not quite at this level. Kenny Goins, for as much as Tom Izzo loves him, probably not at this level. And I think that that's where the Josh Langford injury is a huge hindrance to them. So I kind of look around and I try and find wing players, right? I try and find guys that could really shore up that side of the ball. And I do look at, for them, a Justin James is an interesting guy for me because he could be a secondary ball handler whenever things get a little bit too crazy for Cassius and he starts turning the ball over because you can pressure him and really force issues. They have enough shooting. Realistically, you can play Cassius as a floor spacer. He hits 44% from three. McQuaid can hit 41% from three. So that side of Justin James' game, I think, would be taken care of. Overall, I think that that's the best fit.
Yeah, that does make a lot of sense. It's frustrating watching them play because, in theory, I really like Matt McQuaid next to Cassius Winston. And in theory, I really like what Aaron Henry can be, but I think that you're right in the sense that it's just he's not quite ready. And
they need another ball handler. Yes. Straight up, I think they need another ball handler.
Yeah, I think that you're right. And that's not actually that's not a bad call. I hadn't really thought about that. The names that I was thinking of were like someone like putting like a Robert Franks there or you know, trying to find like an out and out bucket getter that you could put on the wing, somebody that just basically does the same things that Josh Langford does. Cause you know, I don't necessarily know if he's the best for the role that he was being asked to play. Cause he's kind of a ball stopper, right? Like he catches it
a little bit
and it sticks with him and he goes and tries to get a shot and he kind of thrives in the mid range. So I don't know if he's super efficient. He was having a good season. So you got to give him credit there. But I don't think that it was necessarily a coincidence that Michigan State kind of blew up a little bit. I don't want to say blew up when he got hurt, but had so much success when he was down. What, they went 7 straight games after he got hurt? Something like that?
So, to me, the biggest problem during this stretch has been Nick Ward. Nick Ward has not been very good during these 3 games. He has, I want to say it's 10 rebounds in these 3 games combined in 70 minutes of play. He has 31 points in these 3 games combined. You can't have him going for 10-3 and expect Michigan State without Josh Langford to be any good, realistically. So I think they need to get Nick Ward going again. I think that's the biggest thing.
Yeah, I don't disagree. Let's talk about the other Michigan school. If you are John Beilein and you're able to make some trades, what would the move be that you would make? Because I actually have one that I really, really like. In theory, but I don't know if you actually love it. So, you know what? I'll just give you mine. I would take Stanford wing KZ Akpala and send him to Michigan in exchange for freshman Brandon Johns and the future commitment of Jalen Wilson. And I just – so I love the way that KZ would fit on this Michigan team because he is a guy that can really shoot it. He is a versatile, switchable – wing defender, and he is a player that you can kind of have create in isolation and attack in isolation. And you know, Stanford puts him in ball screens a little bit, and he's one of those guys that is just, I mean, you know him better than me, Sam, but he's just a really solid all around offensive weapon that isn't necessarily great at anything, but is a guy that is better at creating his own stuff than I think anybody except for maybe Jordan Poole and Iggy would be on this.
Well, like here's what he is. He's a better version of Iggy. He's a better version of Brazdeikis.
Yes, more or less.
Yeah. So you just bring Brazdeikis off the bench and let him be a scorer, and that would really help them, I think. You know, KZ's length would fit incredibly well within the Luke Jaklich defensive scheme that we all love so much. I think that is... I think that's a great fit. I think really it would only cost Brandon Johns. I don't know that you would need to throw in another one. Brandon Johns is like a top 100 recruit who is 6'8" and versatile and can kind of do a lot of different stuff.
Super athletic. Really, he's going to be really, really good. You know,
I really like Brandon Johns a lot. I think that works for sure.
You know what I'm thinking about right now? Like, I'm thinking about lineups where you have how much fun would this be? You have Jordan Poole, Charles Matthews, KZ Akpala, Iggy Brazdeikis, and Isaiah Livers.
Sure. That's a lineup that exists.
That would be a lot of fun. Tell me that wouldn't be a lot of fun.
But like, then you would also have like their main lineup, which would be Xavier Simpson, Jordan Poole, Charles Matthews, KZ, and John Teske, where like
the second defender
in that lineup is Akpala, who's like not terrible defensively.
Yeah. Okay. And look, you probably won a lot of games that way, but that's just too standard for me. We got to mix it up, Sam. We think outside of the box on this podcast. It's a forward thinking podcast.
The other thing that I would say Michigan could use, I do think that they could use like a playmaking guard, a guard that you can bring off the bench and can kind of just get you buckets when you need them. Where I think that could come from, I'm not entirely sure. I haven't quite thought that through yet, but I do think that is an interesting one that could work for them.
Yeah, and the big thing with them is that they can go through stretches. Like when you have Xavier Simpson, John Teske, and Charles Matthews on the floor all at the same time, you basically have 3 guys that can't really do anything for you offensively. And and look, Xavier Simpson, the running hook, I love it. That's such a cool shot. But teams basically don't guard him for a reason.
Right.
And Charles Matthews, look, if Charles Matthews was like a legitimate above-average scorer, he would currently be playing on an NBA team because he is that good defensively.
Yep.
But he just has such issues like with his jump shot and his consistency. And I don't know if it's like a strength thing or what, but it just it's very frustrating to watch a guy that is that physically gifted not be able to go out. Like, if he can ever be like a 17-point-per-game guy in college that shoots like even if it's just 35% from three, then I'm looking at him and I'm like, he's the perfect 3-and-D wing at the NBA level. Yep. He'll spend a decade in the NBA. But you got to be able to be more than just like what he is offensively. He's when you're something of a liability at times offensively in college, then it's just not going to work in the NBA.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. That's, I think, a very fair take. You know, it's why Charles Matthews probably won't ever be a first round pick for me. Just kind of realistically, it kind of sucks, but you know, it, you know, that's where he's at right now. The other interesting guy that's out there for teams that I don't know that enough people have recognized yet is Rajon Tucker at Little Rock.
Yes. Rajon Tucker. I love Rajon Tucker.
Have you noticed what he's done this year?
What's he doing?
So I'm just pulling up the numbers now. He is like genuinely morphed into a very good player. He's averaging 20 points, 7 rebounds, and 2 assists on 50-40-78.
Yeah, not bad. And he is an absolute freak of nature athlete.
Yes, and he's super long. He's, you know, athletic. He's a good good catch and shoot guy. He can come around ball screens and shoot now. He's like a legit pro prospect in my opinion, and Little Rock is just a mess. Like, they're 7-15 right now. I would imagine that, like, he, given that he's been a 4-year college player, can probably be a graduate transfer at the end of this. And then, or he could like potentially look to go pro. So I wonder if Little Rock looks to move him for someone.
You know who he would be a great fit on? A dude like that? Texas who? Tech.
Yep, absolutely. Go, just have Chris Beard go back to the Little Rock well.
Yeah, exactly. Is his guy still the head coach there?
Daryl Walker is the head coach. Nope, is that his guy? Him.
It was Wes, yeah. Wes Flanagan, something like that.
That's right. It was Wes Flanagan. Yeah, no, he's not there. He got canned after 2 years.
Okay, so the other names that I have in the trades that I was kind of chewing on a little bit were Utah point guard Cedric Bearfield to Indiana for two freshmen this year, or two freshmen next year. They're all, to me, the same at this point. So whoever Larry Kuskowiak likes the most, send him two of those guys for Cedric Bearfield. And the reason I like Bearfield there is I think what Indiana needs is veteran leadership, especially at the point guard spot, and somebody that can shoot it. And Bearfield, he's a senior. He averages 16 points a game. He went for like 35 a couple times in the Pac-12. Like, he can really, really score. And he shoots it at 40% from three, taking more than 7 attempts a game as like the definitive offensive weapon on a Utah team that isn't super great on the offensive end of the floor. So it just kind of all the dots kind of connect there. I was looking at some of like the mid-major guys that are like maybe a Matt Morgan from Cornell. But I think that having Bearfield there makes a little bit more sense than going to the mid-major. Well,
I think that Cornell doesn't deal Matt Morgan because they think that they can make an NCAA tournament run. Like, they're going to have the best player in that league in a 2-game playoff, basically, right?
So, well, no, I wouldn't call him the best player in that league. You know who?
You don't think so?
No, I think that there's a lot of, well, here's the thing about the Ivy. I think that there's probably like a legitimate argument that you can make about like 5 or 6 guys being the best player in that league. Like, well, the Ivy is like sneaky talented.
There's one
talented
guy, but I'm sorry. It's not Matt Morgan. You're right.
Are you going with, let me think, hold on. So let's say I would probably go with Miye Oni or Jordan Bruner at Yale. I think that those are the two, that's the best 1-2 punch. But that's assuming that Seth Towns and Bryce Aiken are not 100% healthy.
Right. Right. Yeah, Miye Oni is the best player in that league. I would say Matt Morgan is second, though. And because of that, I think that, and because he's a guard who can just influence every possession, I think Cornell rightfully should believe that they can go into any game and win.
So do you know why Princeton point guard Devin Kennedy isn't playing right now?
I do.
You do? All right. It's a great story. He took a swing at a cop in a Wawa.
And so, like, from everything I know about that kid, that's very out of character for him. So I just wonder what the story is there. Like, I'm not saying that, like, anyone's lying or anything. I'm just saying, like, I wonder if we know exactly what happened.
I'll tell you when we're not being recorded.
Oh boy.
But that, yeah, that's so, it. That was something that was, well, here's the funny part about it is because when they were playing at Columbia, the Columbia student section decided to remind the Princeton team that their best player had been suspended for violation of team rules for taking a swing at a cop at a Wawa by chanting Wawa every time that they were at the free throw line, which I thought was pretty clever.
It's very clever. I'm a fan of that. So who else do we got here? This is interesting. What other players do we got?
So the other ones I was thinking about, and this is mostly just because I did a VCU game on Saturday, but New Mexico's Anthony Mathis to VCU for PJ Bird, because I am 100% convinced that this VCU team can be really, really dangerous if they find a way to consistently shoot from the perimeter. They have the athletes. They have the playmakers. Marcus Evans is figuring out how to be a point guard. They have a couple big guys that are really good. They just don't have anybody that can consistently or that is consistently making shots. And, you know, I had a chance to sit down and talk with Mike Rhodes about it. And basically what he said was we have guys that should be 35 to 36% three-point shooters that are shooting it at 28, 29% because they don't have any confidence. Shooting is contagious, right? Hot hands extend among teammates. So go out, get you Anthony Mathis, who is just a gunner of all gunners. Let him play on this VCU team that he already plays in an up-tempo system. He's not afraid to shoot it. He's going to make a lot. And once he gets hot, then all of a sudden Darionte Jenkins is going to get hot. Then all of a sudden Isaac Van is going to stay hot. And Shaw Mobley is going to start making some threes. And then, you know, Marcus Evans is going to figure it out. And before you know it, VCU is going to be an 8 seed up center to 1. Boom. There you go.
So, I don't think PJ Bird gets Anthony Mathis, though.
He might not.
Yeah, like I think Anthony Mathis is a very coveted player on this marketplace. And the reason that I say that is because of his elite ability to shoot. You just kind of look around. I mean, how many teams can you look at that need shooters? Indiana badly needs a shooter. Like if you put Anthony Mathis in between Finney and Langford and like move Durham to the bench and gives them another option there, that's a huge win for Indiana, and Indiana can obviously outbid VCU.
The only thing I would say to that is I'm not ready to trust Robert Finney's health at this point, which is why I lean towards getting a point guard instead of getting somebody else. Cause I definitely thought about getting them just a guy that could an out and out shooter that could space the floor. But I think getting senior leadership that you can trust at this point is more important. I think Finney's still shaking off the cobwebs of that concussion, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a chance that that's true.
But you're right, like Kansas State needs a guy that can go out and shoot, and Texas Tech needs a guy that can go out and shoot. And feels like literally I think you can name every single team in the Big 12 and just go straight down the list. And outside of Iowa State, everybody in that conference needs somebody that can shoot.
You know, I want to give Rajon Tucker to Ohio State. Can we just give Rajon Tucker to Ohio State?
Said the Ohio State alum.
Just talent, please. that's what I want. I just want talent there. Am I asking too much?
No, you are not. But you also have arguably the best young coach in the sport. So I think he's going to be able to figure it out. I think you guys will be all
right. Oh, no question. No question. He's a stud. I love Chris Holtmann.
All right, so the other names that I had potentially being available were Ayo Dosunmu, who maybe not anymore now that Illinois.
We still haven't talked about the one that I thought was most interesting on your list that
Which
you sent
one?
Me. Charlie Brown to Kentucky.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. You don't like it?
Oh, no, I think it's the most interesting one. I mean, I don't know if it's like the best or worst one necessarily. I think he would be a tough integration just because he likes to have the ball in his hands a ton. But like from a theoretical perspective, he fits incredibly well.
Yes, he does. And I think that he is a guy that could very much use a dose of cows, you're going to play a role or you're not going to play mentality. Speaking with some people around the Atlantic 10 that would know, I think that the issue, so St. Joe's is the most talented team in the Atlantic 10, outside of maybe St. Louis, but like they should definitely be better than they are. And they're at the bottom of the league right now. And yeah, part of the reason for that is they think that somebody got in Charlie Brown's ear and he is more worried about ensuring that he has a higher draft stock than he is necessarily about winning. And it's kind of permeated their team. And now Charlie Brown isn't necessarily playing his best. And it just, it's turned into a pretty bad situation. So I think that moving on from him might help them a little bit. And Jamal Baker is a guy that can probably do some really good things in the Atlantic 10. Like, he was a top 100 prospect. He can really shoot it. Yep. And I think if you put him on that roster, he'll have some success. And Charlie Brown, like 6'7", big wingspan, can do some things defensively, can really, really stroke it. I think he is a perfect fit to play a role on that Kentucky team. I mean, you put him in there, I don't think he'd start over Keldon Johnson and Tyler Hero, but I think that he's good enough that he would push them where they have to be better. Like, if Keldon Johnson has another two games like he's played the last, whatever, like last 2 weeks, then I think Charlie Brown can slide in there, and he's a good wake-up call option off the bench.
Well, they need another wing, realistically. They need one more wing, I think, and that's a really, really good idea. Like, that's the kind of move that could put them over the top for a national title. I actually really liked that one a lot.
Yeah, I think I've talked about this with you, but I love what this Kentucky team is right now.
So do I.
I legitimately think that they are now, we talk about the tiers all the time, and I think at this point, if I had to do it today, I would say that the top tier in college basketball is just five teams, and that includes Tennessee, Gonzaga, Duke, Virginia, and the Wildcats. And I think I would put them a cut above North Carolina, Michigan, Michigan State, and I think that's probably it.
Yeah, I would still have it Virginia, Duke, Gonzaga, Tennessee is my top four. And then I would have like Kentucky and North Carolina and maybe Michigan in that like next one all by themselves. And then I'd have like Michigan State, Virginia Tech even, you know, maybe throw Louisville and Iowa State in there. Maybe throw
Iowa
Kansas
State,
and
baby,
Auburn,
you're on the bandwagon.
There.
Let's go.
I've been on the Iowa Let's State go. Bandwagon. They are incredibly talented. I don't know that I would throw them in the same class as Virginia and Duke and Gonzaga, especially, but and Tennessee, I think you have to throw in that group as well. But they're like at the top of the next group for sure.
Yeah. All right. So the last one that I had, which you just poo-pooed all over before we went live, was Wichita State's Marcus McDuffie to Duke for Alex O'Connell. So tell me why you hate this trade, why you hate Marcus McDuffie, why you think Alex O'Connell is going to be the next star at Duke, and why you would not make this trade.
So what Duke needs above all is shooting, right?
Yes.
So you're taking a better shooter and replacing it with a worse shooter. Like, you're taking Alex O'Connell, who is, you know, what, at least Duke's like second best shooter, probably, right? You know, depending on, maybe he's probably Duke's best shooter.
What I would say to that is this: there's a reason why, despite being Duke's best, second best, whatever shooter, Alex O'Connell isn't seeing the floor. And it's the same reason why I, as what would be like what, Duke's second best shooter, would not see the floor playing for Duke. Because the other things that Alex O'Connell can do aren't good enough to get on the floor when you are competing for minutes with the likes of Cam Reddish and Trey Jones and RJ and all those guys. And I think McDuffie is a good enough defender and versatile enough and a good enough shooter where he will be able to make sure that that floor is spaced, especially if all you're asking him to do is kind of stand around and be a catch-and-shoot jump shooter. I think he's a good enough shooter to be able to do that. And I think that he would be able to fit into the rotation better defensively, because I don't think that it's not going to drop off. He might even be a better defender than what Cam Reddish is. He might be a better defender than what RJ Barrett is. And I think
defender as a sophomore, at least.
Yeah, and I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I've watched Wichita State play 25 times this season, but from what I have seen, I don't think that he is – I don't think he's awful. That's interesting. Elaborate on that point you just made.
So he was a really good defender as a sophomore when their defense was really, really good. Do you remember that? Like they had a top 15 defense or whatever. He was the second best player in the league, if I remember correctly. I think he finished second in player of the year voting. Was legit really good, but I think it's dropped off since then, honestly. Like I think that it could just be due to role. Like he has to take on more offensive, initiation.
And last year he wasn't healthy, so I think I have a hard time judging him based off of what he did.
Right, that's why I kind of threw that out. Yeah. This year I think he's just been a little bit worse. The other thing about him is he is a black hole. Like he doesn't pass the ball. He just doesn't ever pass the ball. Throughout his
career. You know what? Then he'd fit in perfectly with RJ Barrett.
Another reason why it would be a concern in that case. But yeah, no, I'm not a fan of this one from you. This is one where we disagree a little bit.
So what I would say to the defensive side thing is, so
he has it in, like he might be able to defend.
And you're putting him onto like a top five defense in college basketball. I just think that if you're basically asking him to kind of fill that role and be switchable, he has the physical tools to do it. I think if you're asking him to be a guy, even if he never passes, if you just stand out there on the perimeter, make a defender come out and guard you so that that defender can't stand in the lane when RJ Barrett's trying to drive. And then when he catches the ball, just shoot it when you catch it. That's fine by me. I think that's perfectly within what he's being asked to do. And honestly, like if you just have him take Jack White's minutes and do what Jack White does, because that's basically what Jack White does. He just catches it and shoots it. The problem is Jack White is catching it and shooting it and missing right now. He is. I love this line. I forget whose line this was. Maybe Eric Bossy. I can't remember. But he said about a player. He's like, he's not a shooter. He's just a guy that shoots a lot. And I think that's what Jack White is right now. So if you the way that I see this is that you sacrifice Alex O'Connell, who I don't think is ever going to be good enough to play major minutes at Duke, at least not with the way that they're building their program. You replace Jack. You sacrifice Alex O'Connell to replace Jack White's minutes with Marcus McDuffie, and to me, that makes it worth it.
I'm trying to think of where we can send Javon Quinterly.
I don't want to send him anywhere, man, because I want to see what happens to him. Give him a year working with Villanova so he can kind of figure out what it is that Jay Wright wants, because I want to see what happens when he kind of buys into that Villanova offense. And like, look, Jay Wright has had guys like this before, and it's kind of, it hasn't necessarily worked out. But I think if you look at the way that he kind of develops players and gets them to buy in and kind of basically says, look, you are going to do what we want to do. And it was interesting. You know, Goodman had him. Did you listen to Goodman's podcast with Jay Wright?
I did not.
It was actually, he asked him specifically about Quinterly, and Jay Wright was basically like, look, if we just let him go and go do the Jelly Fam stuff, he could go out there and break anybody down. But the problem is it's everything else that comes with being a part of that program, that Quinterly has not quite picked up on yet. And I want to see what happens with Villanova if Quinterly does. So, like, we could send him somewhere. But I want to see him succeed there, because I think that he has the kind of skill set where if he figures all the rest of it out, he can be really, really, really good for the way that Villanova wants to play.
Yeah, I'm like trying to find a team that runs like a real like spread system that might be willing to like make kind of a like challenge trade almost. It's kind of hard. Like it's hard to find the right dude that makes,
you know what,
sense.
You know what, right? He might actually make a little bit of sense. And he might actually be too small, but I think that Marquette needs another ball handler and another playmaker, because I think they put too much on the plate of Marcus Howard. The issue with them is I think that they're kind of like Iowa State in the sense that all of the pieces that they currently have just really fit well together. And mostly what they need is Chartouni to like actually be good. You know, if he was a guy that was good, much better than he is defensively, and got the, like, I think he's got the yips when he's passing. He's gotten over it a little bit, but he went for a, he had a nice little stretch where all he did was turn the ball over and throw the ball to the other team. And if they can get him to be the guy that we thought he was in theory, that's what they need, which is why I didn't have Marquette on this list. But I do think that they could use another ball handler, because you watch, like, there's a reason why Marquette What if they lost? They've won 16 of their last 18, and those two losses have both been to St. John's. And both of those games, he was being guarded by basically Justin Simon for probably 30 of the 40 minutes. He struggles with length and athleticism. Justin Simon is 6'5 with like a 9-foot wingspan, and as athletic as guards are going to come. And I think that if you can find a way to get those guys off of Marcus Howard, that's when you are going to be able to win games like that. Because he's going to run into guys that are long and athletic when you get into the tournament. And that's what kind of scares me about Marquette in a series where they're going to lose, like one loss sends them home.
What about if we did Javon Quinterly for Daniel Gafford?
Oh, so you put Gafford on Villanova
in the middle of their scheme. Let him protect the rim. They'll run a ton of pick and roll for him, unlike Arkansas does. Arkansas needs a point guard to build around because I'm not particularly a Jalen Harris guy.
The only thing I would say to that is you would kind of be sacrificing this season in a sense. And
for who?
For Arkansas. Arkansas is legitimately on the bubble. They're legitimately.
Are they really?
Yeah, they're legitimately now like one of the. They're not the first four out, but they are legitimately in the conversation for the next four out. The guy that does
they have
our bracket,
like two top 80 KenPom wins.
Yes, and that's what the bubble is right now. The guy that does our bracket, Dave Ahman, is like he's twice been like won the most accurate bracket in like the last 6 years. He's really, really good at this, and he has Baylor as like the He has Arkansas as the seventh team out right now.
That's fascinating. I didn't realize they were that close.
Which is why Isaiah Joe is not on another team right now.
Well, Isaiah Joe shouldn't be. They should be building around Isaiah Joe. He's a stud.
I love him.
He is the most Rob Doster player in the history of college basketball.
Dude, he just shoot him up, sleep in the streets, baby.
He legit takes 9 threes a game.
Yes. Not enough. He should get more. You know, when you shoot it like that. That is that's the Eric Bossy special. Feels like leather. Let it fly.
Oh my God. What if we gave him to Oregon?
For who?
Kenny Wooten?
That would make sense. Would Kenny Wooten fit the Villanova ethos? If you know what I'm saying.
Fair question. He would really help them defensively, I know that.
He certainly would. Gafford fit a little bit better than Wooten.
What if we just did Javon Quinterly for Peyton Pritchard? They get Pritchard for 2 years.
Yeah, well, then Villanova's probably winning the national title again. I love Pritchard.
He's good. He's a good player. But, like, you know, if you get a chance to swap a 2-year player for a 4-year player that has more upside, I think you probably do it, right?
Yep. And Peyton Pritchard, like, he just – I think that he was meant to go to Villanova. He was just born on the wrong side of the country.
Right. This is my favorite trade we've come up with yet.
Javon Quinterly for Peyton Pritchard. Boom. There you go. That's a great way to wrap this up. Sam, listen, man. I kept you for an hour. I did not mean to keep you that long. I do appreciate the time. I told you guys already, you can find him at The Athletic. You can find him on the Game Theory podcast. Go rate that. Go review that after you rate this and review this podcast. Samuel, go get to your gym class, man. I want to make sure you keep living your best life.
Thanks, Rob. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening. Follow me on Twitter.
Give me 5 stars.